This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Gonna ask you something in a moment here, but what do you think about stories and claims about a breakaway or secret civilization? Because that's sometimes raised in connection with the airship mystery and even UFOs in general.
You just couldn't hide anything like that. That's just the kind of explanation that people come up with when they can't think of anything else. You know, it's a reductionism, really.
We've got a question from Pig Farmer. This is similar to what we talked about. He says, should the stories of 1897 airships be taken literally, or are they meant as entertainment at the time? Has that been lost in the intervening decades?
Well, I think just a few minutes ago I talked about the entertainment value of stories like that. Like the Aurora story of the Martian crash, I'm sure was just made up to entertain people. And it was understood by those who read the story in 1897 that it was just simply meant as amusement, that it wasn't meant as a description of a literal event. Yes, you read these old newspapers. Even now, you can see some of the humor. Some of it's still funny.
Do you know of other examples where they did stories like this, that where they were playing jokes on residents? I mean, I'm familiar only with the airship stories from the period.
Well, there were a lot of stories of wonders of various kinds. I think the phony airship stories are part of the tradition of wonder stories, marvels. And the marvels included things like, you know, lake monsters, you know, creatures, various wonders, things that, you know, just seem not possible, people's supernatural encounters. Now, I'm not saying all these things were completely false, but if you were to make up a story, you would often make it a ghost story or something like that. Or just some other thing, even if it's not supernatural, just some, you know, rather unusual and out of the ordinary and very interesting claims about, you know, human events, some human experience. Yeah, it wasn't just airships. It was a bunch of stuff. And I actually had a book come out some years ago dealing with that. I called the book Unnatural Phenomena. And it was about these 19th century newspaper stories of just fantastic things that probably didn't happen in consensus reality or even in someone's perceived experience, but were just entertaining stories of marvels and fantastic events.
On the other hand, I don't think anyone, except for very few people, will remember the hoaxes that Jim Moseley and Gray Barker did in the 50s and 60s. I don't think so. I don't think they'll survive. Too few people cared about them.
They're remembered by those of us who were around at the time.
Right, but we don't have much time left. I'm not speaking about you, Kurt. But Jerry and I are as old as the hills.
I think that those are worth preserving because some of those did have an impact. Certainly the Men in Black had a lasting impact. So it's good to have that information. You know, some people think that it's, you know, that's the warts of ufology, but I think that has to be preserved too.
Well, you know, Gray Barker single-handedly created the Men in Black mystery. Yet when they came out with the graphic comic book, neither Gray Barker nor John Keel were paid for the germination of an idea that resulted in billion-dollar grosses from three major motion pictures.
Well, when you say that Barker invented the idea of Men in Black, I mean, that's true in some sense. But just today I was reading a clipping from, it was from the 1870s or 1880s. I just printed out this afternoon, put in a file here, which I have in my hand. But there are Men in Black stories that go back a long time. And even in the UFO context, the first Men in Black story was the Man in Black in the Maury Island case, or the Maury Island hoax from June 1947.
Maybe then that Ray Palmer and Kenneth Arnold created the Men in Black mystery. I'm saying, though, other than that, Barker was a main figure in pushing the idea.
Yes, that's true.
But then, you know, I agree with the observation that Palmer had a lot of influence in the early UFO field. In fact, Keel calls him the father of ufology.
Yeah, sightings were the father of ufology. Or maybe Charles Fort, who was the first one, put sightings between book covers and perceived that they were part of an international phenomenon. I don't think that Palmer was that important a figure except to a certain subset of hardcore science fiction readers. But if you read the newspaper coverage in the summer of 1947, you never see Palmer's name mentioned, but you do run across Fort's name.
I think, well, some of the people that were following Ray Palmer went on to be influential, and they were devoted. So there was something to that, but you're right. It was mainly driven by the events that were in the news, you know, primary from the sightings.
The people who put this thing into focus, if you read, again, this newspaper coverage, summer 1947, which is our best representation of what was going on then, they were not Palmerites. They were members of the Fortean Society. And they were the ones who were interviewed and said, look, this is nothing new. Sightings like this go back a long way, which was a revelation to almost everybody because the Fortean Society was tiny. But these guys had the special knowledge that put a perspective on what was going on after Kenneth Arnold's sighting. It's just a myth that Palmer was a major figure in this. Palmer was a guy who exploited anything he could, including Richard Schaefer's mental illness. So he exploited flying saucer sciences. He exploited everything. But he wasn't the guy who started it. And he wasn't the guy who put it into the context of extraterrestrial visitation for the average newspaper reader.
Let me throw an outside question at you here, since we're talking about an experience phenomenon, an event phenomenon. And that is, how much of UFO sightings are really just the experience, as opposed to something that's possibly has an external reality, it's an external event?
I think that the high strangeness cases are overwhelmingly experience anomalies. I think that the event anomalies, as I say, are the hardcore cases. Now, some of them, you know, the average witness doesn't have access to a radar, so we can't document that the daylight disk he saw was physically there. But let's just assume that the ordinary UFO sighting of, you know, some nocturnal light or daylight disk or something like that is an observation of an actual object whose existence is potentially documentable. But when somebody talks about men in black or monsters, otherworldly journeys, abductions, where you're just going off the scale in strangeness, and the stranger the story gets, the less verifiable it is, the harder it is to prove that it happened. It's actually the rather, you know, the typical 1950s sightings that NICAP was interested in, that Kehoe was interested in, are really the evidential cases because they involve, you know, the kind of technological verification that shows that something was there that shouldn't have been there and that had certain characteristics that are really hard to explain in terms of, you know, what we as humans can do with aerial vehicles in our time. But as time went by, it was as if the older supernatural traditions got attached to this core phenomenon, this core UFO phenomenon, and old themes that are a part of human experience as long as there have been humans get attached to this, and they take on the coloration of, you know, extraterrestrial activity. But it yields no proof or evidence that is equal to the degree of its strangeness, you know. And it just seems to me that it's probably futile to connect, say, you know, some great radar visual case with some fantastic abduction story. They may be just two entirely different things.
We've got Jerome Clark. Putting it together, Once again, Curtis Collins joins us. More listener questions on the other side. You're in
the Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Message and data rates may apply.
You don't follow the herd. You blaze your own trail. And you're as adventurous in the kitchen as you are in life. Whether it's paddleboard yoga or Peruvian steak, you're the first to try new things. So are we. We're Green Chef, the first USDA-certified organic meal kit delivery service. We offer delicious meal plans for 7 different lifestyles. Paleo, gluten-free, keto, vegetarian, vegan, carnivore, and omnivore. Want to be the first of your friends to try Green Chef? Discover our exclusive introductory deal by texting the keyword FUN66 to 543-543. We believe that cooking, just like life, should be all about experience and flavor. And by exploring dinner options with Green Chef, you'll try new recipes, techniques, and ingredients for bold, new restaurant-level flavors. It's like enjoying a new cooking class, but in your own home. To experience this culinary adventure, text now and discover our exclusive introductory deal. Text FUN66 to 543-543. That's FUN66 to 543-543.
Are you one of the 70% of Americans that want to own your own business, afraid to leave the security of your current job to pursue your dreams? I'm Pharmacist Keith. Dr. Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, and myself want to show you a low-cost way to create your own business, working around your current job schedule, creating an extra income for you and your family by joining his crusade, spreading his message of better health. To learn more, visit radio.recordedvideo.com, radio.recordedvideo.com. That's radio.recordedvideo.com.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Kurt, more questions?
We had a couple more. There was another one from Pig Farmer, and he says that in the Great New England Airship Hoax of 1909, and that's a title, Wallace Tillinghast, claimed to have invented an advanced flying machine that he was testing at night. This resulted in a number of people witnessing it and reporting as such. Do you think something very similar to the effects described in 1909 were at work in 1897? Were people seeing things because other people had seen dirigibles?
Well, yes and no. Of course you're going to have an effect like that. But as I want to stress again, the airships were an international phenomenon. And the airships were described pretty much the same way wherever they were seen. There was no question that people were observing things that looked like, you know, fantastic dirigibles. And my memory of the Tillinghast affair is a little, it needs some refreshing. But as I recall, and I could be wrong, if I am, I should be corrected, Tillinghast didn't actually claim that he had invented these airships. He just let other people believe that without specifically denying it. Now, in California, November 1896, December, there were stories of people who claimed that they had invented it, but the people were not traceable. There was a guy named E.H. Benjamin who claimed to be an agent or an attorney for an inventor, but that inventor never showed up and never revealed himself or even proved that he existed. So, you know, there's all these stories that people, you know, people tell stories. It's kind of like crash saucers, you know. You can always find someone who says he was there and he knew about it and so on and so on, but he could never prove it. And either the person is making it up or just has somehow convinced himself that it happened, but it's just not provable. And eventually you realize that his testimony is worthless as evidence. I think it's something like that kind of social psychological process that goes on.
That reminds me a bit of the people in the Old West that claimed to be some of the dead outlaws, or a lot of Jesse James and Billy the Kid walking around. And I think our friend Ray Palmer claimed to have discovered one of the survivors. I forget which outlaw it was, but there was an old man claiming to be a famous outlaw and had his picture taken.
It was Al Jennings who claimed to be Jesse James.
And that was absolutely false. We want to make sure people know that. So the last listener question is from Angela Lauren, and he asks, how can we plot the changes over time of what people have seen in the skies? We went from airships to saucers to eggs to cigars and most recently triangles. What can we gather from this change of what people are seeing? Has the tech of whatever we are seeing changed? Or more likely, in my opinion, it is only because humans are projecting their own understanding.
One thing that we have learned in this age of modern historical scholarship on the phenomenon is that the modern UFO age really did not begin in June 1947. It actually began in the early 1940s. As we've gotten access to all kinds of newspaper stories, official documents about Foo Fighters and so on, we see virtually the entire modern UFO phenomenon there starting in about 1940, people describing exactly the kinds of UFOs, saucers, discs, triangles, cigar shapes, all these things that have been reported since actually began in about 1940. And so the UFO phenomenon is actually older than the modern phenomenon. It's actually a few years older than we think it is. And the only thing that's changed is that all these high strangeness stories and experiences over time grew attached to that core. The core has remained amazingly stable. There's a very good book that was written a few years ago, and I actually wrote the foreword to it by a guy named Keith Chester. It's a book on the Foo Fighters, and it's virtually the definitive treatment. He did an enormous amount of research, and as I pointed out in the foreword, this book documents that this phenomenon is a few years older than we thought it was. So the change is not in the basic UFO, it's in the high strangeness that becomes attached to that basic phenomenon.
I recall Ed Ruppel reading his book. He makes a maddeningly brief mention of having witnessed Foo Fighters himself. And, you know, I thought that was really interesting, and I certainly wanted to hear more about it.
I don't remember that. I remember he writes briefly about meeting an old guy who had seen the 1896 airship in California. And virtually nobody got to talk face-to-face, nobody in our time, or at least in earlier time when these guys would have still been alive, got to talk with a witness to the airship. That would have been really good because it would have been unmitigated by this often faulty and dubious newspaper coverage. But Ruppel doesn't go into any detail. He just says the guy saw this thing. And he doesn't really go into it. And it's very frustrating. I wish he had.
I wanted to ask what you thought about something that was kind of in between the airships and before the 40s era. There were a number of mystery airplane reports. Have you looked into those?
What happens with the airships is that they kind of evolve into mystery airplanes. But the problem is that the vocabulary in the early age of aviation is a little shady. It's a little ambiguous. So sometimes they will refer to something as a quote-unquote aeroplane, and other times they'll call it an airship. And you have to really read and look for the detail to find out exactly whether they're referring to like a monoplane, a biplane, or like a dirigible. It's not always clear because the vocabulary begins to change in the early 20th century. So there were mystery airplanes that apparently were biplanes or monoplanes that at least were mysterious to the people of the time and had no clear origin. But it's just hard to say what they were about. They were could very well have been just an evolutionary development of the airship phenomenon. But by that time, there were genuine airplanes flying around. They were rare. If they flew over your town, that was a novel experience and people came running out to see it, but they were there. So it's just hard to know what to make of these stories. They're not, in other words, as clearly anomalous as the airship reports were.
If I can change the subject, I wanted to ask you about, because you were talking about talking to one of the few witnesses, but you, as I understand it, you met with Kenneth Arnold and had access to some of his research. I think very few people in the UFO scene now realize how much of a UFO investigator he was and the people that the witnesses he talked to, the reports he collected. So what kind of records did he have? Did you get a look at those?
We'll have the answer to that question about Kenneth Arnold and more with Jerome Clark. And Kurt and Gene, you're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hear that? That's the sound of a house being trashed while a gang of thieves ransack the place. And what they don't steal will be destroyed.
This year, resolve not to be the next victim of a break-in. Go to faketv.com and discover a device that creates the illusion someone inside is watching TV, even when you're miles away. Security is a mindset, and Fake TV should be part of your security solution. Be vigilant, but not fearful. faketv.com.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
I tried other brands, but I came back to my sunshine.
For the best hot or cold pain relief, get the best. Get a Sunny Bay heating pad.
Sometimes life can be a pain in the neck or back or shoulder.
And the best relief for that pain is a Sunny Bay heating pad. Did you know that the American College of Physicians said that one of the best ways to treat muscle pain is heat therapy? Sunny Bay heating pads are handmade with high quality, can be used at home or at work, and have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy.
Why take another pill?
Many people use our Sunny Bay heating pads alone and got rid of the neck pain.
Long distance travel or long hours in front of a computer can take its toll on your body.
See why our homegrown small business at sunny-bay.com has tried to help people just like you. Get your Sunny Bay heating pads at sunny-bay.com. That's sunny-bay.com. Or call 253-678-1361. For hot and cold therapy, sunny-bay.com.
Bitcoin is losing crypto market share to other digital currencies. Bitcoin's astronomical rise led to the creation of numerous competitors like Ethereum, Ripple, and Litecoin, which have also seen massive gains in value. According to Quartz, Bitcoin made up 85% of the crypto market 1 year ago, and today it has fallen to 36%. Remember, the only way to win in the casino is to take chips off the table. Call Miles Franklin at 866-485-4346 and let us show you how to quickly turn your Bitcoin into the 5,000-year-old safety of precious metals. Miles Franklin can quickly convert your Bitcoin to precious metals with one phone call at 866-485-4346. That's Miles Franklin celebrating our 29th year in business without ever receiving a customer complaint. Call us at 866-485-4346. Fast, easy, safe, and convert your Bitcoin into gold with one phone call.
Are you still looking for that one iodine that you can really trust? A medical doctor-endorsed product that is backed by honest research and true integrative science? Then search no further. Go to NutraMedical.com for Dr. Bill Deagle's Nutriodine, proven time and time again to be the very best iodine available for you. Nutriodine is the only Tesla-activated monatomic plasma iodine in the world. It optimizes mitochondrial function and generation of new mitochondria from totally neutralized the venom from a desert recluse spider bite in Southern California to eliminating malaria parasites reported by medical missionaries in Central India. Dr. Bill's Nutriodine is simply the most powerful healing formula there is. Nutriodine clears the body of all known pathogens, restores it to an alkaline state, and even promotes stem cell regeneration. Order Dr. Bill's Nutriodine today at 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutraMedical.com.
Hi, it's Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Okay, Jerry, you met Kenneth Arnold?
I knew him. He was actually, I knew him reasonably well.
Tell us more.
Well, he was pretty much as advertised, an ordinary, unimaginative guy. Just, you know, he was a, very much a Westerner and conservative, both in, socially and politically. You know, he wasn't stupid, but he wasn't an intellectual, let's put it that way. I like Ken Arnold, but he was an ordinary guy, and he wasn't anybody who made this stuff up. And basically, if you asked him what he thought, he basically parodied Ray Palmer, because Palmer was the first guy that he hooked up with after his sighting. And he was completely confused by what he'd seen, and he needed somebody who sounded as if he knew what he was talking about to guide him. So even in the 1970s, 1980s, when I knew Arnold, I'd say, well, what do you think about this? And he would say, well, my buddy Ray Palmer said, so I just get some cockeyed Palmer thing. But I had the impression that Arnold really didn't think about these things when he wasn't being called upon as the guy who had heralded the UFO age. What happened was that after Arnold had his sighting in June 1947, he really got interested. He loved to fly. He loved to fly around the Northwest and just do this and that. And so he decided he was, one thing he was going to do was fly his plane around the Northwest and look personally into some of the UFO reports that he read in the newspaper. So he'd fly around. He'd talk to people. He talked to people who claimed they had seen flying men in the early part of 1948 in the state of Washington. And the most memorable one, the one that I wrote about, was his interview with Samuel Eaton Thompson, the guy who claimed he had met the naked Venusians. And I got Thompson's tape of his interview with Thompson. Thompson's experience took place in early spring of 1950. And I've written about that. I've given the full account of that story. And it was really interesting. I was thinking about this recently, in fact. Arnold's interview with Samuel Eaton Thompson. And Arnold had the classic event anomaly UFO sighting. Thompson had a classic experience anomaly UFO encounter. And so between them, when Arnold was talking with Samuel Eaton Thompson, you were dealing with the two extremes of what would become the UFO experience. And I'm thinking about writing an essay on what that was like, the symbolic significance of that meeting.
Was Eaton's story, did it receive press coverage?
Very little. The Thompson story?
Yes, very little. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there were only one or two newspaper stories, and they were not detailed. They reported that this guy, he was an old guy, about 78 years old, retired railroad man, and that he was driving home through rural Washington. And he had seen this saucer on the ground, and he went to examine it, and he saw these, well, the story goes on, but essentially these were like Edenic Venusians. They were beautiful, naked men, women, and children who were just incredibly innocent and didn't even really know how to fly their saucer. And he claimed that he had stayed with them for about 3 days, and the story is completely off the charts, of course, but if you listen to this tape, and this was Arnold's impression as well, Arnold told me, there was no question this guy believed it. Now, Arnold thought the story was so ridiculous that he and Doris, his wife, you can hear them having a hard time keeping a straight face as this completely earnest guy relates this bizarre, outlandish tale that he says happened to him. But Arnold knew this guy really meant it. And there are all kinds of clues. If you listen carefully to what he's saying, the way he says it, it's very hard to believe that he made this up. It's equally impossible to believe that it happened in consensus reality. So the only thing that Arnold could figure out was that this guy had had some kind of visionary experience or unusually vivid dream. I think that's, you know, given, you know, Arnold's vocabulary and his understanding, I think is probably pretty close to the truth. But this was clearly what I would call an experience anomaly.
Well, about that tape, do you still have a copy of it? Is that available anywhere?
No, unfortunately, my copy. There's things that happen to me that when they happen to me, I always say, gee, I'm glad I'm not a paranoid. But the tape disappeared.
Oh, boy.
But the good news is that a full transcript of the tape was made. And it was on that. I heard the tape before it disappeared. And I have the transcript, so I was able to give a full account of everything that's on that tape. So there's no part of the story that's missing.
Do you know if any of his UFO records survived?
Now, that's a whole other story, and the answer is, unfortunately, no. There was, back in the 1990s, I was dealing with one of his daughters in an effort to reclaim his files. And it turns out that they were discarded long ago. All the case material that he had from the late 40s, early 50s that he had collected from his own investigations, it's all gone. It apparently was thrown away. He died, I believe, in 1984, if my memory is correct. And all of his files, I don't think anybody really understood what he had. And it was a few years later in the early 1990s when suddenly we realized, you know, I was going to fly out to Meridian, Idaho, to collect that stuff, and it turned out it didn't exist. Yeah, that's a real tragedy.
It's not uncommon. I remember after Jim Moseley died, his daughter, Betty, took all of the stuff that she thought had value and had a garage sale. In fact, somebody posted in our forum saying, would you like to buy one of Jim Moseley's electric typewriters?
Yeah, that happens.
Oh, boy.
It's just, you don't even want to think about it. It's just so heartbreaking.
What's also, you reach the point where real life gets involved, and you're trying to cut back.
Yep.
And you have 3,000 pounds of stuff, and you want to make it 2,000 pounds. And you think, am I ever going to use this UFO stuff again? What value does it have? And I've done some of that.
There are also cases where UFOs were really an issue within the family. For example, the husband, the father, was spending too much time running out on weekends and interviewing UFO witnesses and collecting UFO materials, reading UFO books, attending UFO conferences, neglecting the family. And so by the time the guy dies, there's a real resentment of his UFO involvement. And so the vengeance comes in destroying his life's work. There have been cases of that.
Yeah, I can see where that happens and why that happens. But at the same token, Jim was giving a lot of stuff away deliberately to a few people that he'd like. He sent me some stuff. He sent somebody in New Jersey who was head of a UFO organization way back when. And so he sent that stuff to him as well, mostly because he just, you know, was trying to cut back in his life and he never thought he'd have any need of any of that material. For better or worse. I have another question which kind of goes back to the early UFO cases that seem to have more solidity about them. And we've talked about this before, but I'll raise it and we can discuss it in further detail in the final segment, plus whatever else Kurt wants to bring up. And that is, how much of what we saw in the early days was really secret test aircraft? And maybe people misinterpret a few things. And the secret aircraft suddenly is doing all sorts of maneuvers that it really couldn't do. More to come with Jerry, Gene, and Kurt. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
As you know, neighbors, web hosting can be pretty cheap, but not all hosting is the same. DreamHost wins best of awards year after year. You get unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, and even the low-cost plans put your sites on high-performance SSDs. Want to know more about what DreamHost has to offer? Go to technightowl.com/host. Once again, that's technightowl.com/host.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and slingbows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug-out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Hear that? That's the sound of a house being trashed while a gang of thieves ransack the place. And what they don't steal will be destroyed.
This year, resolve not to be the next victim of a break-in. Go to faketv.com and discover a device that creates the illusion someone inside is watching TV, even when you're miles away. Security is a mindset, and Fake TV should be part of your security solution. Be vigilant, but not fearful. faketv.com.
One out of four people listening to my voice right now could die from heart disease. This could be your last year, and you don't even know it because you don't know the early warning signs. If you think you're safe because your cholesterol levels are normal, think again, because studies show that 75% of heart attack patients also had normal cholesterol levels. Let me introduce you to Strauss Heart Drops, a world-famous heart and brain formula made in Canada. It's time-tested and will give you clinical results in 90 days or your money back. Learn more at signsofheartdisease.com. They are shipping free this month.
Hello, my name is Marjorie Wildcraft. I'm the founder of the Grow Network, which is an online community of people who produce their own food and medicine. We are really into backyard self-reliance. If you want this lifestyle, I suggest your first step be to learn some basic home medicine. Just the other day, my 18-year-old son came to me and said, "Mama, I got a sore throat. Can you fix me up?" And I said, "Sure, Ryan." And in about 24 hours, he was better. The best home medicine for you to start out with is garlic. It's an amazing natural antibiotic, and I can show you how to use garlic to handle ear infections, sore throats, colds, and flus. As a way for you to get to know a little bit more about me and the Grow Network, I've written up an easy introduction on how to use garlic. It's at gcnwellness.com. Now, the station manager told me that I needed to say the URL at least twice, even though it feels kind of weird. But if you're interested in backyard self-reliance, you are one of us. Go to www.gcnwellness.com and let's connect up.
The answer to being in control of your own health care is freedom from insurance. Become part of a group of self-pay patients that come together to share in each other's medical expenses. Individual share amounts begin at $107 a month and $347 for families. Choose from three health sharing programs. Holistic treatments may be eligible for sharing. See guidelines. Discount programs available for dental, vision, and pharmacy. Go to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
This is Jacques Vallée, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So, Jerry Clark, what do you think about the impact of early government experimentation, especially with the stuff they picked up from the Nazis at the end of World War II?
Yeah, I think that was pretty slight, somewhere between slight and non-existent. What's happened, paradoxically, is that with the passage of time, the secret weapon or the secret experimental aircraft with extraordinary performance characteristics becomes more real. And a real possibility when you're investigating a UFO case, that this indeed could be some kind of advanced weapons technology, advanced aviation technology that is within our capacity. It's just classified. But in those days, back in the early days, we know what the aircraft technology was then, and it couldn't imitate what flying discs were doing. But in time, over the decades, yes. When you're investigating a case or someone tells you about, say, observing a big triangular-shaped craft, you have to consider the possibility that it could be one of ours.
And as I said, is it possible the reason they seem so strange is because maybe people put too many things into it? You know, the information is not quite accurate. And if you exaggerate it in one direction as opposed to another, it seems stranger than it really is.
Or I think probably what happens more often in my experience is that people downplay the strangeness of it for fear of ridicule or just their own inability to process a truly unexpected experience that's just simply out of their expectation of what you can see or experience. I think that plays a larger role in many cases than in the cases of exaggeration and wishful thinking. There's a real strong social pushback against people reporting strange experiences. So we internalize that, and if we do have a strange experience or strange observation, we really try to minimize its defiance of ordinarily understood reality.
So therefore, it's different. It's taking a case and making it more mundane than it truly is.
Yeah, I think that happens because people don't appreciate. I always maintain, and I'm surprised that this is not widely understood, the single biggest social factor in UFO history is the presence of ridicule. Ridicule has defined almost everything that has gone on since Kenneth Arnold reported his sightings. UFO sightings, UFO beliefs and theories have always been expressed in defiance of withering ridicule. And that's one reason there's no scientific advancement of the subject, because scientists don't want to be ridiculed. Why people who see UFOs usually don't talk about it. They don't want to be ridiculed. People don't want to be associated with it because they don't want to be ridiculed. So knowledge does not advance. People just cover their heads because they don't want society to be making fun of them.
I'm going to make 2 points about that. One is to challenge it just a bit that ridicule pre-existed. It was existed and was in effect way before flying saucers and even sea serpents and probably, I think there's even instances of in the Bible, I think, with Doubting Thomas. Some people want to think that it was created for flying saucers.
I never said it was invented for UFOs.
No.
I'm just saying that it is a major factor in the way the UFO controversy developed, that ridicule was always attached to it. Ridicule is attached to all kinds of socially unacceptable claims and experiences. UFOs aren't the only one, but we're talking about UFOs. That's why I mention it in the context.
Right.
Of
there are some, though, that think it was part of a government disinformation scheme, and I think that's a huge exaggeration. But what do you think about the idea that, you know, besides the ridicule, there's been a lot of exaggeration of a UFO cover-up and just what the government knows. So have you ever met someone within the government that, or in talking to Dr. Hynek, that you thought that there actually was someone that had substantial knowledge beyond what anyone else has?
I've met people who wanted me to believe they did. I think that actual UFO hoaxes are relatively rare. Even the Air Force said there was about 1% of the stories that the Air Force examined that seemed to be somebody's conscious fiction. And there are some subsets of UFO claims where there are more hoaxes than usual. And I think that in stories of government cover-ups and crash saucers and stuff, I think a lot of that stuff is conscious fiction. And if someone tells me that he is privy to huge government UFO secrets or hardware bodies, you know, I just shrug it off because, you know, it's just a story. Unless someone can actually prove that there's a cover-up and that there are bodies and wreckage, it's just not worth listening to these people. Because so many of them just are proven liars and the rest are suspect.
There's been a suggestion that some of the things that came out in the 80s about abductions and Dulce and things like that were things that were planted by a government disinformation agents. And that seems implausible to me, but I thought your views on that would be interesting to hear.
You mean like a Richard Doty?
I didn't want to say his name.
Why not? Maybe he'll object to it and want to come on the show so we can talk to him.
My impression, I'm hardly an authority on this, but Doty is just, you know, a pretty low-level guy, and I don't know that he had, for it isn't noble, but larger motives. You know, I just, you know, all I know is that stuff is a bunch of sick crap. And that's all it is. That's all I need to know about it.
Well, he may be the kind of guy that has an overinflated image of himself. So he puts himself in places where maybe he doesn't deserve to be. I'm just being kind, too kind.
That seems reasonable. I call it the dark side fantasy. That's my particular name for it. But I remember one time it was a big thing. I'm glad it hasn't been a big thing for a long time.
It survives mostly in the X-Files.
Yeah, yep, that's right. Good point.
By the way, I do have a letter from Rick Doty dating to early November about him being involved in some things, including exorcism. Do we start with him?
Oh, no.
I don't know where to go with that, so I'm just going to drop it, okay? Jerry Clark, please tell our listeners before this gets off the rails any more than it is where we can find more of your stuff.
My last book was published in 2012, and I am just about to embark on the third edition of my UFO encyclopedia, an item of news that seems to be exciting to some people, which is quite flattering. But yes, we're going to have another book out. So it's updating my UFO encyclopedia with all kinds of new information on old cases that's come to light in the last 20 years, plus trying to update with what's happened in the last 20 years. So it's going to be a lot of work, and I've got some good people who have pledged to help me. And we're going to have a real good book at the end of it.
When do you think it'll be out?
It's supposed to be out in the fall, but I haven't written one word of it yet. But I promised my publisher I'd deliver the manuscript in the spring. So anyway, I'm confident it's going to be a good book, not because I'm a brilliant genius, but because I have some brilliant geniuses who are helping me, people like Eddie Bullard and Bill Chalker and Tom Tillene and people like that who are very capable people.
Okay, he doesn't have his site up yet. We'll have to help him get a website up. We'll force him into it. Kurt Collins has a website, which is
BlueBlurryLines.com.
It is the ultimate tongue twister, BlueBlurryLines.com. You can find us on Twitter if you look for the Paracast, two Paracast fan clubs on Facebook, the group and the community. Choose the one you like. After the Paracast is our exclusive podcast available only to members of the Paracast Plus. Also, CastBox, this podcast app, they're also offering Paracast Plus, and they give you more options to pay for it, I think, but you don't get the special option to enter our forums. But otherwise, it gives you the shows. Anyway, if you want to subscribe to the Paracast Plus direct from us, it's plus.theparacast.com for more info, plus.theparacast.com. And we also give you a version of the show free of the network ads and better quality audio. Kurt Collins has been my guest co-host. Thanks again, Kurt. He'll return on After the Paracast with some surprises. Jerry Clark, thank you for joining us on the Paracast.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been fun as always.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Fully cooked, ready to eat bacon. I'm talking thick, meaty, center cut, presidential bacon. Savory and delicious. I buy some, I use some, I store some. Awesome. No refrigeration needed with a 10-year shelf life. NASA pack technology. Bacon. Fully cooked, fully hydrated, ready to eat right from the pack bacon. Or warm and served. Life-saving, ready to eat bacon. 10-year shelf life bacon. Ships free at fullycookedbacon.com. Fullycookedbacon.com.
It's a no-brainer. A Big Berkey water filter is the one you need, period. You need a water filter that removes chlorine, fluoride, pharmaceuticals, BPA, and other endocrine disruptors, pesticides, bacteria, viruses, and much more, right? And does it all at only 2 cents per gallon. Get the original and most trusted name in gravity water filtration, Big Berkey. And now GCN listeners receive 5% off ceramic filter systems using code GCN. Call or click 1-877-99-BERKEY or BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY.